And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, it's my great pleasure to once again welcome into the studio Chief Lance Ketterling of the Palmer Police Department.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. So you drove over. What's it life like on an early morning out there in the winter right now?
Oh, it's a typical Friday, I would say. The roads are slippery, but so we want everybody to slow down and be careful. But beyond that, it's a typical Friday morning for February.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. And in contrast, I've been picking up that if you were intending to go down this weekend to Seattle, Washington, the suggestion is don't do it.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that, actually. I have somebody supposedly flying back from Seattle tomorrow, and we're anxious to see if that's actually going to happen or not.
Right, right. And that's one of the strange things. When we're in a particular location, you can be just a little bit away. It could be down in Girdwood, or it could be all the way to Seattle. And the world is different.
Oh, very much so. Like, yeah.
So maybe that's the way we can begin here. What I'm curious about, and in part because the legislature has started its activities in Juneau, and one of the really focus points, both for the governor's administration as well as, at this point, the Senate, is whether there should be further changes made to the policies, the legislation that govern criminal justice here in the state of Alaska. We've talked about this before in relation to, is Palmer an anomaly? Is it a different situation? How do we compare to the rest of Alaska, perhaps even to Anchorage, in terms of crime? And crime statistics. So maybe because you're here, you see this, your people have the information.
Sure.
How would you summarize? And it's just a tough question. How would you summarize crime in Palmer?
So to answer your question about are we an anomaly, certainly the answer is no, we're not. This is affecting Alaska in general, and certainly not even just localized in Alaska. The lower 48, the country in general, has been seeing some radical changes in criminal activity. But to confine it to Alaska, and perhaps more specifically Palmer, the past 5 years have been busy years. 2017 was the highest year that Palmer has had for theft, for those types of property crimes, in the last 5 years. Interestingly enough, it's not the highest what we had in the past 10. 2008 was a busier year in terms of thefts. But I believe in 2017, we had, 271 incidents of thefts in the city. So, two every 3 days or so. And then in 2018, I think we were down slightly to about 250, 251 theft calls. So still high for Palmer standards. We average typically around 180, 190. But it was an increase, and it was a notable increase. So we can say this isn't just a statistical anomaly. It's a statistically relevant increase in property crime. And this mirrors very closely what other agencies are seeing around the state.
Okay.
So in terms of violent crime, assaults are up to a minor degree. The thing is, trying to attach a sole cause to that and look for the easy explanation is almost certainly a way to get the incorrect explanation for why these things are happening. So there are a number of factors that are acting on crime trends in the city right now, and certainly in Alaska. There is a large increase in the homeless population in the valley, which is substantially altering the landscape of criminal justice around here in terms of minor thefts, what people would call nuisance crimes, that type of thing, minor assaults. There is a significant increase in mental health issues that the Valley is dealing with, that Anchorage is dealing with. Alaska in general is having to confront these. And also, Senate Bill 91 was a landscape-changing bill when that was passed a few years ago. And so all these things are kind of – there's an opiate addiction or an opiate issue that's going on. Meth is making a comeback. So all these things are acting together and creating what we see now. To say that one of those individual topics would be the real reason for it would simply probably be a mistake. They're acting on it together. They do all act on it, though. And to say that, repealing SB 91 is going to fix everything, I don't think that's the correct answer either.
Mm-hmm. There's an emotional content in what appears to be the discussion of SB 91 and whatever changes or repealing that would go on with that. And listeners can have an opportunity to watch this actually happening. Gavel to Gavel had good coverage of the presentations, and those are archived so that if you want to know what departments are saying about statistics and giving information to senators and soon representatives about the state of the state in terms of criminal activity. That's one place to go. Now, one of the things that I found when I was watching that was interesting to me is the question of, if we're going to make descriptions available about criminal activity, you get down to the level of saying, well, how is that reported? And as we have talked before, there's in process here in Alaska, a little bit late in the process. Other states have already moved in this direction to provide more detailed information about criminal activity in terms of an event. At the present time, there's a reporting system. How does a crime that happens here in Palmer get reported, put into the record? Maybe that'd be the thing.
So that is an interesting question. It depends on to whom it's being reported is one of the main things. If you're talking about the federal UCR database, the Uniform Crime Reporting Database is what is supposedly voluntary information that departments comply with. I think most of them do, because if you don't, you can lose federal funding. But at any rate, it covers basically part one and part two offenses. And UCR has been in place for decades.
Right.
I don't know exactly how many decades, but it's been in existence for a long, long time. And so they break it down to part one and part two offenses. One is typically more serious. The other is somewhat less serious. And each activity that the officer goes to is going to be coded in a couple of different ways. One is with an offense code that is used by or an activity code that is used by the database that we put information into called APSIN, the Alaska Public Safety Information Network, and that's a 4-digit numeric code. And then UCR is typically a 1 or 2-digit plus a letter code that will say if you have, say, a simple assault, you score that as a 1313 in APSIN, and then I believe it's a 6 or 6D in UCR. And so these are then sent into the federal UCR database, typically on a monthly basis, but certainly at the end of each year. And then they take those from around the country and compile whatever data they do with that information. So it can depend on, you know, say you have an assault, if it's just a simple assault, or if it's an assault with a weapon, or if it's a domestic violence assault, or you know, what type of weapon. Is it a firearm? Is it an edged weapon? Is it a blunt weapon? Is it a strong arm assault? And this is the time of information that's collected now. It goes to the federal government, and I believe it's in Maryland or Washington, D.C., and it's then correlated and released in a yearly report somewhere, you know, a year or so after the calendar year that it was collected in. So in other words, we don't have 2018's UCR data yet, and we're not going to get it for some time, would be my guess, just simply because they have a bewildering amount of data that they have to correlate and sort through in order to put that report out.
So in my experience in the past in situations where you have people who are working in an area who have people have information, a lot more information than usually gets written down about any topic.
Quite a bit more.
And the curious thing has long been, okay, what is the most essential information? And I'm guessing that in developing these systems, people have said, well, here's ways in which we can get essential information, but really getting the nuance is a little more difficult. For example, I'm thinking that officers here in Palmer know individuals. the knowing of the individual and their personal characteristics is something that doesn't get put into the database.
No, it doesn't. And I don't know of a great way to do that with the UCR as it's currently structured. But community policing is something that we've seen in Palmer for as long as I've known Palmer, simply because it's what we've had to do. It's very well suited to a small community like ours, where the officers are expected to go out and know their customers. They're supposed to know the businesses they serve, the individual citizens they serve, and certainly the offenders that they might deal with on a regular basis. So yes, they know individuals, they know locations, and we keep data on information that might not necessarily even go into UCR, and quite a bit of it. So we release a monthly report that the city council gets about quite a bit of things in terms of just the activity that the officers are doing, simply because we want to know if what we're doing is working or if we're seeing an issue or someplace we need to improve. So they're very cognizant of the types of criminal activity they're seeing. They communicate daily about this sort of thing, and it's important. Not only just with Palmer, but there's good intercommunication between Palmer and the Alaska State Troopers and Wasilla PD, because the reality is we're dealing with many of the same individuals.
Across lines, okay. Yeah. So you use the term voluntary for some of the reporting information. Is that about to change? Is there going to – I know there's a new system which is called NIBRS, National Incident Board Reporting System, and that is in process of being implemented, if you will, with a start date of a couple of years from now.
Yeah, 2021, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. And one of the things that I've heard about that particular reporting system is that, one, it is significantly more robust in terms of the number of data elements that are going to be collected. But it also suggests that if you have an officer who's reporting, they're going to have to spend more time putting all of that in. The question is, are we looking at something that's shifting from voluntary to required?
Well, it's hard to say. And I don't think it's going to be required, because simply I don't believe that the FBI, who maintains these databases, has the authority to require anybody to make these reports. They certainly don't with UCR. However, it is very strongly encouraged that law enforcement agencies do so. I know the vast majority of law and agencies that I'm familiar with do report UCR numbers. And if you do not, then you run the risk of losing federal funding for some of your programs. So it's not technically a requirement. However, there are penalties for failure, and sometimes those are pretty significant. So most places do. And furthermore, it's really, you know, probably the right thing to do anyway, because knowing what we're looking at in terms of accurate data, and I really do strongly believe in data-driven practices, provided that the data is looked at reasonably. It helps you know if what you're doing is working or if it's not. So now there's, of course, that element that if you torture the numbers long enough, they'll confess, and you can get them to say just about anything. This is just one of the risks we run. So you've got to be very, you know, kind of cognizant of what you're doing with this data, what it is you're searching for, because that's what you're going to tend to find. It's that statistical anomaly that you're going to find what you're looking for. So you have to really kind of figure out, and we don't have a lot of control over what the feds want in UCR or what they want in NIBRS, but you do have to be aware of what numbers you're looking at and what they truly represent while you're crafting your strategies and tactics to combat crime. It's just a simple matter of the way things are.
And of course the we'll finish this up in a moment here, because I'm thinking that one of the most important things you've said here is that you really don't have the statistics from 2018, and that leads to the real question of how if something as big as SB 91 or something similar has happened, well, on what basis do you make a sweeping change when we're still trying to tease out whether a particular factor has been the cause of increased criminal activity, or whether SB 91 in a very complex set of changes recommended by basically 15 of the people who represent all kinds of different aspects of mental health,
sure.
Senate, you know, et cetera, made recommendations. It was all parsed by the legislature, and out it comes. How long, and it may be almost a rhetorical question, how long does it take to figure out whether something like that in a sweeping change has really had a good effect or not?
I would offer up that it is almost rhetorical, because people other than you and I are going to make that determination. And, you know, from a reality perspective, in Palmer, I can say conclusively that Senate Bill 91 has had some type of effect on criminal activity in Palmer. And I know this simply because we've had defendants tell us that, hey, you can't really do that because of Senate Bill 91, or go ahead and write me the DWLR ticket, driving my license revoked ticket, because it's no longer a crime. It's just a violation in this case because Senate Bill 91. And yep, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, you can book me into Matsui pretrial if you want to. But we have a statewide bail schedule that says this is OR. I'm not going to be in there for more than 20 minutes. It'll take you longer than that to do the report. So we have, in fact, heard these things from local defendants who are cognizant and well aware of what the potential ramifications are.
About the other side? Because a report in November of 2018 that attempted to look at the effects of first of all, just looking at the statistics – and not necessarily correlating,
sure.
said, since SB 91, which was passed in 2016, revised in 2017, has been in place, we can look at some statistics, and it's not everything getting bigger. There are some things that have apparently responded to whatever set of factors, and crime isn't getting, looking at all of the different categories, necessarily increasing across the board.
Mm-hmm. So I'd have to know specifically what you're talking about before I could really comment on it.
Yeah.
I mean, what numbers are we talking about that are decreasing that we're seeing?
Let's start with maybe the question of prison populations. You've suggested that that there's been a decline in incarceration.
Oh, without doubt.
Yeah,
without doubt. The question is whether or not that's a good thing.
Yeah, and that's where I'm leading this to say, okay, then how do we the other aspect of it, and we'll be leaving this topic, it has to do with recidivism, and I've heard various statistics about people who come back into the system, go out, come back into the system, but I've also seen that there have been some programs that have had some effect, working with people who have been incarcerated, have come out. And have not gone back, and and that was one of the intents of SB 91 was to reduce recidivism, I believe.
Well, that was indeed, and I think reducing recidivism is always a noble goal. And if we can do that and prevent people from reoffending, that we're a big step ahead. We want people, if they're going to be released from incarceration, it would be good for those people to have some life skills to be able to function in society and not reoffend. So, and getting back to your point of reduced prison populations, that absolutely was a goal of Senate Bill 91. It had a lot to do with financial means or the financial cost of running a prison. And so how have we reduced the prison population is one of the big questions. Again, looking at data, you can torture the numbers and they'll confess. Are there fewer people in prison now than there were pre-Senate Bill 91? I don't know the answer. Maybe there are, maybe there aren't. But let's entertain the notion that there are fewer. Have we done that by reducing crime, or have we cured cancer by outlawing the diagnosis? In other words, sure. have we reduced criminal activity, or have we just decriminalized certain things or made the penalties for certain things less, so now there are fewer people in prison? And if the answer to that is yes, are there fewer victims? And I would submit that the answer is no, because there's some very, very frustrated citizens all around the state and certainly in Palmer right now that have been victimized repeatedly. In many cases, it's property crime, but sometimes violent crime as well. So why is – if it is down, and I don't know that it is, but if it is, why is it down?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because people are acting better, or is it because simply we're not choosing to incarcerate them? Yeah. And there's a big difference between the two.
Good. Nicely put. Well, we have a few minutes left, and what I'd like to do is segue a little bit. We have in the past talked about some technology, particularly body cameras, and and I've noted some articles talking about departments around the country that have been concerned about body cameras, particularly the interesting thing of storage of what is captured on cameras.
Yes.
Where is the City of Palmer's Police Department with body cams?
So we're fully committed to them. The officers have been issued body cams for the last year and a half, 2 years now, I think. And the officers like their body cameras. It's a great way to collect evidence. Mm-hmm. I hear almost universal support for them.
Okay.
The trick is storage. Where do you put all the media files? Because they can be quite large. And so for us, the reality is you're faced with really two possible choices. You can maybe elect to use some type of cloud online storage, which is, you know, a way to go, or you can just buy more servers and put the data there. And then the other thing is you have to have a robust and ethical way of purging unused video from your files. So Palmer has a records retention schedule which allows video that's not needed, has no case assigned to it, just maybe a contact on the street or a traffic stop where there's no citation issued. It's non-confrontational. Generally, those are kept for a period of about 30 days in case a citizen, for whatever reason, might want to file a complaint. So we can review that, and then they're purged, they're removed. Videos that are evidentiary in value are kept for the period that we would keep any other piece of evidence, and it's all done in accordance with our records retention schedule.
Well, that's interesting. So the follow-up question would be, how are those stored files coded? I mean, is it just by...
Yeah, there's a labeling system in our policy and procedures manual for how to put your video into evidence and how to label the file so it can be retrieved as needed. And there are different files that they go into depending on what they are.
Okay. Make that happen. All right. So it sounds at least at this point, that you're retaining the use of the cameras. And I guess the bottom line question is, have they proven useful beyond the psychological fact of having them?
So very, very much so. And I would submit that the psychological effect, in other words, are people going to act nicer because they're on camera? It was not actually as great as we thought that it might be. Now, the officers, we expect them to be polite no matter what, as long as they're allowed to
sure.
be polite. But and there's been studies around across the country about body cameras. And some of the earlier ones were considerably smaller. You know, a study with 60 or so officers fielding cameras, and I think it was New Mexico. And then you compare it to a multi-year study in Washington, D.C., where there were, 1,800 or so body cameras in effect. And what they're seeing is that, much like a digital recorder where there's no video involved, but people might know they're being recorded, it doesn't improve behavior as much as perhaps we thought. In other words, you're always on camera, so act nice. That's a great theory. It doesn't quite work out exactly that way. It does have some beneficial effect here from what we've seen, but it's not as great as we had thought. The real thing is it's a great way to collect evidence. It's a great way to review citizens' complaints, which we get relatively few of, but to have that evidence and that footage is very, very helpful. And the officers like it as well, because it really makes their cases better.
Okay. Mike Malevsky, I'm here with Palmer's Chief of Police, Lance Ketterling. And we've been talking about systems and cameras and the rest of that. We have a couple of minutes left. Is there something that you would like to add?
So speaking of crime prevention, we have a Neighborhood and Business Watch meeting coming up in later this month on February 27th. That's a Wednesday at 7 o'clock at the Depot. So if you have a business here in town, or if you're a resident of Palmer, or even if you're not a resident of Palmer, just want to come by, we're going to talk about how to start, how to maintain a healthy business or neighborhood watch, what the programs are and are not expected to do. Probably take about an hour and a half or so, and that's a good chance to meet your neighbors and talk about getting one of these programs going.
Okay, and that's February 27th at the Depot across the street there.
Yep.
And we actually are going to be there to cover it. talked to the city council about doing that, so it'll be available for those people who can't happen to make it. And we also had an officer stop by here just to chat about our location, et cetera, just recently, and that was very informative, helpful.
They are out and about right now collecting after-hours contact data and just doing their yearly kind of rounds where they go and try to meet everybody. Then, in a situation that doesn't have to do with a call for police service, this is just a kind of a friendly stop and chat and say, hey, how everyone's doing, what are you seeing? And it's good to do that every so often where they actually aren't called because of a problem. So just a nice officer-initiated thing.
Yeah, very good. It worked well. Well, thank you, Chief Ketterling, for coming in today for Inside the City, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you as the weather gets a little warmer, even though it's so nice.
Thanks, Mike.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.